We also, I think, have to start with the infamous pause issue that happened, because maybe that was the most exciting thing that happened in the LCK this past week. T1 getting publicly angry at the league, and then there are all these shenanigans. What happened?
Right now, the refs have kind of like colloquially told every player, like, yo, there's a rune bug going around right now. Make sure as soon as you get into the game that you check your runes and make sure they're correct. So that
you make it
there
sound like
problem,
a disease.
Yeah, it kind of is. It's
infecting their gameplay.
So game one of the series, T1 smash it. It's whatever, like, not important. And then in game two, T1 draft Ashe for Gumayusi. And then around like four and a half minutes or so, he realized that he needed to pause when he went back to buy early boots and realized he went magical footwear instead of approach velocity or some of the other builds that Ashe would want to go for. He was eventually, after a long pause, rejected because Riot was like, you should have asked for this earlier. The game has already happened and it would be unfair. His owner is playing Xin Zhao, and he is just destroying on Fleek. He invades his jungle early, and he is, as he's invading on Fleek's jungle, smiting repeatedly. I think it was cuz, if I remember correctly, it was like, okay, this is his smite just went back to 15 second cooldown, so that was really fast and not fair. And there is a bug that has existed since, I believe, Worlds last year was the first time it was seen. I think it was like Gen.G versus Team Liquid.
Sometimes, guys, what happens is when you use a charge of Smite, instead of resetting the 90-second cooldown, it resets the 15-second cooldown. So you get an extra charge of Smite after those 15 seconds.
Immediately at this moment, like, on Fleek is like, I don't think that's right. Like, that's weird. That doesn't make sense. And the Honda Life Esports coach immediately identifies this is not right. On the other side, owner realizes, like, okay, this is definitely not right. And he tells his teammates about it. Now, there was some discrepancy about what actually happened because he posted officially on his Instagram right after the matches in Korean that he's gotten a lot of hate for the pause. But actually, in fact, he raised the issue with the referees. He mentioned it several times. But in fact, according to LCK, he raised it several times. He did mention it, like, whoa, this is bug, this is definitely wrong, to his teammates, but did not officially ask for a pause. The referees took several minutes to review and identify that the smite was, in fact, on the incorrect cooldown. And then the game was paused moments later while Gumayusi was, like, getting a triple kill in the bottom lane. Like, in the middle of him, like, hopping around on Kalista, like, about to kill a third person, that's when the pause comes. When the decision is made that there is going to be a chrono break, the players are told, and the T1 players are, like, a little bit confused by it, but they're like, okay. And then the unpause happens suddenly without the players being informed, is what T1 said. And, like, based on the players' reactions, I believe it. So they just instantly pause the game again. So then it was rewinded one more time. And then instantly, like, the whole fight is changed because Honda Life Esports has the information on what's going on. They want to save the play. T1 win the fight almost even harder than they had in the first iteration of the game. Guma in the bottom side gets the same set of kills that he had the previous time. And then the game just continues and T1 absolutely smash it. Now, there's one more pause that we have to talk about, which was
the final pause.
The final boss, which was Chani, who's having his official debut game, asked for a pause, like, right with, like, as the inhibitors are going down, and he's like, I need to go to the bathroom.
Which is, so, by the way, understandable considering that this is now like a multi-hour game, guys. So
he goes to the bathroom and then T1 kills the Nexus. The ball was dropped, the handling was poor, and it took way too long to actually both identify the problem and then correct it and come up with a very fast solution here.
This massive failing on the part of LCK, where they have no plans when things start to go wrong, and they just leave the teams out to dry, where it's like owners getting piled on by people, and Joe Marsh and T1 are tweeting about this kind of shit and trying to deal with it and do damage control, and LCK is literally just sitting there being silent. And at the end, they release some mumbo jumbo with some rules listings trying to explain it that just says LCK at the bottom, and no one ultimately takes responsibility at this league. There is no face, there is no human being who is in charge of leadership of this league who is making these decisions and owning them publicly. Instead, what they do is they cower behind this blank facade of the LCK. They respond late and they let the players get shit on. Do your job, LCK Commissioner, Mystery Ghost Commissioner. Do your job. Your job is to tank aggro. That is your purpose, okay? It's not to just sit there and do absolutely nothing while the players get piled on for mistakes your staff made.
It's kind of like Faker has been saying, and it's been a discussion, like, we do need to fix these things because this is how we get taken seriously as a sport and as a league. And, like, when you're a sponsor, even if you're a sponsor looking to sponsor the LCK and you see all this negative PR and all the craziness on Twitter, it looks kind of amateur. And I want there to be, like, these people need to be held responsible and these things need to be fixed. And, like, this can't be happening twice in a single year. We had this issue with Dom1 and T1 earlier this year. Like, this can't continue to happen because every time it's a really tense and important match, the refs can't freeze up and be like, what if I make the wrong call? You have to make the wrong call and be responsible for it. Otherwise, you probably shouldn't be a ref.
All I'll say is this. You are a two-time LEC champion, but most people just think it was Humanoid.
Well, I mean, I knew this was coming because I also thought this way. You know? The thing is, I also thought this way after this spring because we had, like, the worst... ever, right?
Sure.
And I was like thinking, I mean, you always get to think, like, where did it go wrong, right? Like, what is the problem? Sure. Is it me or, like, is it, like, someone else, right? And of course you look at who left the team, and it was Humanoid and Kazi, right? At least in summer we could actually prove that it wasn't only them, right? It was still,
yes,
like, we still had a good core, and I think I'm really glad that we could actually prove that we are still good players and not, like, just getting carried by Humanoid.
Yeah.
Well, sure. You guys got the closest thing to a Humanoid. You guys got Humanoid at home, which is Niski, of course, the guy who's constantly replaced by Humanoid on various rosters.
Team chemistry has a lot of, like, part in that. Like, if you are, like, really good friends with your teammates, for example, and you trust them and you basically follow all their calls, like, in a heartbeat, like, the game looks really easy. I think we didn't really have that last season. Like, we were, like, mostly a bit more distant, I would say, to each other. And I think, of course, I played bad as well, right? I tried more, playing more aggressively because I felt like I needed to be more aggressive, I think. Because of that voice was kind of missing, I had to maybe change my playstyle a bit and, like, look for a more aggressive place myself without, like, having anyone else to rely on it mostly. Like, maybe Ayoya, right? Like, Ayoya was our short caller back then, but, or, like, much easier to play when someone else is talking, because, I mean, for example, for me at least, I didn't really short call in any team, so it was harder for me for sure to have, like, one less voice in the team. And Kazi was also, like, a big short caller, I would say, so Unforgiven joining kind of amplified that effect a bit, because Unforgiven was also, like, a rookie, right? And, like, all these factors kind of came together, and it was a bit too much for me and a bit too much for Ayoya as well. And I think you could see that in our gameplay. I think we played bad as well, right? We can't just blame everything on, like, the new guys coming in. I think we should be able to step up more as well, right?
By the way, you re-signed your contract at the end of 2021 for an additional 2 years through the end of next year. So what made you want to stick around?
I think it was... I think we have a really good coaching staff. I mean, that's for sure. True. I think the coaches are really smart about the game. They are really, like, friendly. They know how to create a good team atmosphere, I would say. And I think atmosphere is, like, really important for me, because I think not enjoying to play with your team is, like, the worst thing that can happen. Like, if I didn't enjoy my job, I would just, like, chill playing, I don't know, WoW or something, and just, like, not care about the game anymore, because, like, having fun is, like, for me the most important thing. And I think that's what drives me kind of to play more solo queue, to actually try in scrims, to actually, like, play competitive games, because I just like having fun kind of. And I think I could have the most fun. I thought I could have the most fun in Mad Lions because, yeah, just because of, like, coaching staff, atmosphere. And, like, sometimes I do regret it, right? Like, I think about, like, what could have been if I didn't resign. For example, especially after spring, right? I mean, it is kind of obvious that seventh, like, you kind of regret your decisions, right? I think it's hard to say whether it was the right call to resign, but I don't really regret it at this point anymore. I just, like, yeah, live with the fact.
So what were you guys doing between spring and summer with Niski that allowed you guys to engineer your synergy and this playstyle together?
I mean, we actually didn't have to do much. I would say, like, Niski is kind of similar to Kazi in a way. I think it was really easy to integrate him into the team. I mean, playstyle-wise, we kind of knew what we would get, and he kind of delivered on that, right? He's always really a selfless guy. He's really vocal. He plays the champions he plays, kind of, to a good level, right? I wouldn't say he's, like, a carry, like Humanoid, for example. Like, he doesn't tell you, yeah, I need this farm, like, give me 10 CS per minute, stuff like this. And I don't think that's what we wanted either. I think we wanted more of a Niski, right? Like, a selfless player that roams with me and Ayoya to sidelines, and we get the sidelines ahead, and these sidelines will carry us, right? And I think that was our game plan, and Liski wanted to do that as well. So we basically were on the same page from middle one, and yeah, basically no problems.
If we're going to like big up all the good parts of G2 on those weeks, this has to be a week where we have to talk about the flaws in the squad. And one of the angles I actually do see in this team that I think means it doesn't always work that well is if you think about their team, right? It's not that like Perks did it all. I hate that shit narrative because it just makes like a, it's too reductive on both sides, isn't it? Because then obviously when Perks goes to like Vitality, it's why people now flame him in Vitality, because their logic goes like this, Dom. But you guys said he was like a god shot caller, blah, blah, blah. It's like, first of all, I never said he 1v9s games. So I don't know why you're pretending like I acted like he's forgiven or something. Like he needs teammates. I've always said that. And then secondly, one thing I think when I look at the G2 squad is I actually do think they suffer from not having the Perks aspect, mate. Because what the point of all the people I've been talking to recently is when G2's at their best and when G2's at their worst, they say the same thing. It's like for them to be the best, Caps and Jankos have to be the best. If Caps and Jankos are the best in the league, then G2 can win. The problem with that is, mate, that essentially implies to me there isn't like a true shot calling setup in the team. Because you've noticed now they're really bad. Like they don't ever get like super strong early game leads. They're not like some power closeout team. They're just like a middling team in terms of how the eye test plays out. I actually think in their team, like it's going to be tough to have a perfect squad. They're going to have times like this where if players' form is off or they're just not the best at their position, you're not going to win games sometimes, I think.
Yeah, I think they're in a really rough spot because originally when they came into the league, they had a lot of like creative drafts. I mean, they did like the Diana, Yasuo, Yone comp, and they had their own take on what the meta was.
Sure.
And it feels like as they started losing, they've become more and more like narrow in the champions that they're willing to pick. But now it feels like they're in a situation where they don't actually understand the meta. They don't know what their meta read is. So before you thought, oh, well, you know, it doesn't really matter what the overall meta is. They're going to find their own thing. But now it looks like they've lost confidence. This team, like, I just feel like they're not done by any means. They just have to figure out their identity again, get some wins, get some confidence, and then go from there, build upon that. And if they need to, maybe it's time for them to pull the Misfits and just go back to what was working originally. Draft Orin. Just draft fucking Orin top every single game. Draft the solid lanes for Flockhead, and then just let Caps and Yankos do their thing and just get some wins on the board, because it feels like they've forgot how to win. Like, I remember as a player, I would have similar experiences where you do something well for a long period of time that you almost take it for granted and you start branching out on other things. But if you're not consistently going back and practicing what your roots are, you lose it. And then when you go back and you're like, oh my God, it's not a free win anymore. I've had this happen with pretty much every team I'm on. You overestimate your ability to just jump back to the things that you did well and automatically win. So you've got to just bring it out every now and then.
Like, first of all, on that angle, like you're saying there, of like when you build up a skill, it's easy to take it for granted, basically. And in fact, even to make the mistake, this is a more general point, obviously, than just about esports. It's also very easy to think, because I've now got that skill, it's actually easy. Like, you know, now that I've got it, it's like riding a bike and I'll never forget it. But actually, that's the difference. The reason, by the way, everyone always cites the example of like, you don't need to like learn to ride a bike twice, is because that's one of those things that's like a very unique, actually. Like, that and swimming, you really can just not do it for like 10 years and somehow you will do it. Everything else, in my opinion, in life is the opposite. Like, basically, once you build something up, as you say, like part of why it seems easy is because you essentially train yourself unconsciously to just be able to iterate that same like blueprint motion of like do this first or do like a certain motion or an order or timing. And so if you stop doing it after a while, you almost have to consciously think about it again to make it happen.
It's definitely an underrated part of just League of Legends as a whole. And part of the reason that I watch so much LPL is because when you watch these teams, they are they're very strict on what they play, and they don't try to be jacks of all trades. They have their styles, and you get to watch teams that are very practiced at their own styles just compete against other teams that are great at the things that they're great at. So you have this really good dynamic between teams that are really good at both of the things that they're doing. Whereas I feel like in the West, everyone just like tries to become super like good at everything. Like somehow they can play like side lane, they can also play mid, but then at the end of the day they're just not great at any of them, and that's not what you're going to need to build a championship team.
Humanoid still does that now, dude. Even when he's having a terrible game, he just does the most like fucking he will just gamble every flash hold he can do, like, because he wants to, like you're saying, he still wants to shit on everyone. He's still like, he actually plays like he doesn't know that he's in bad form. Plus he just thinks he's the best every game, which in a fucked up way I sort of admire, because if people don't know, people who have that mindset, they they can ruin the game for you. But I tell you what, anytime they get good, they are amazing if they have that mindset. That is because that's the mindset where if you actually are the best, you don't just beat the guy. You're like fucking stood on his neck and he can't even do anything. You just dominate the guy, you know.
I think the problem with Humanoid is that he's bought too much into his solo queue persona. So for people that don't know, his username in solo queue is Jonah Falcon. And if you don't know who Jonah Falcon is, he is the Guinness world record holder for having the biggest penis of all time. That's who that guy is. So I feel
that's
like
his name on solo queue.
Yeah, that's his name.
Well, that's a definition of big dick player right there. Yeah, exactly. He's nailed it.